Someone asked me today, how am I doing with living in the now? This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with Instant Illumination. How am I doing with living in the now? Well, if you have to ask that question, you're not living in the now. You're living in the how am I doing. You're living in the judgment. You're living in the past, because you're going to compare how you did then with how you're doing now, and then you're going to compare it to the future of how you should be doing it in the future with how you're doing it now. I mean, you really have a problem, don't you? You really have a problem. How am I doing living in the now? Well, we had the privilege of bumping into, you had the privilege of bumping into two little men today. They came with their father. And one was, what were the ages, would you guess, Tom?
7 and 11. 7 and 11?
Oh my, that 11-year-old is very advanced. Okay, the 7-Eleven came to campus for a few minutes with their father and picked up some trash and things to take away. And the 7-year-old had said to his father, Dad, you forgot you made a promise. Because the father had promised to come here at 9, and then he was already on his way someplace else before he realized that he was supposed to come here. And so he told his son told him, Dad, you made a promise to them. You told them you'd be there. And so the father came and talked about what he was going to do. But he didn't fulfill the promise of what he said he was going to do. I will be here tomorrow with my rig and pick up all that junk. You see? Now, he came today, which was tomorrow, and he brought his rig, but he brought his rig because he was going to take it somewhere else. And so he only took a few things from here because he didn't want to take time away from where he is putting his time somewhere else. Now, his boys, at least this 11-year-old, is a most remarkable young man. Ellen says, they own a little restaurant in Campo here in Cameron Corners, and they sell primarily Mexican foods there. And the little boy waits on the window because he speaks such good English, and the father sits in the back making the meals, and he does very well at that. But the boy is learning so many things right now from the father and from the world. He's learning to live in the now. He's learning integrity. He's learning to be delighted in being who he is. He's learning to respect his responsibilities. You can be sure that that 7-year-old that tags along with the 11-year-old, that tags along with the 2-year-old, the father, you know, that the 7-year-old is going to learn a great deal from the 11-year-old. And from what what Anita tells me, the 11-year-old is a very responsible boy. And is he living in the now? What determines how he lives in the now? He lives in the now by knowing that every single thing he does is done now. He doesn't plan for another day. He does it now. Let's get as much on the tractor, on the trailer. Let's get as much as we can out now. Now, why would he do that? You see, the more loads that they would take, the more they would charge us. And so if they filled it up halfway on each load and took it out, you know, we had to pay the full load. Now, the boy didn't see it that way. He saw that they had given a promise that they would take trailer loads of things away. And so they really should have loaded it up fully. Well, in his mind, in the boy's mind, it was loaded up fully. But he's very cool. A very cool 11-year-old kid. He did not pretend that he was muscle-bound, that he was going to go in and lift those heavy weights. He left that up to his dad, who had plenty of muscle to do it. But you see, what he did, he was in the driver's seat always. He had the little the dolly to take things with. He had everything for his dad when his dad needed it. But he was always living in the now. He was always seeing it done. I would have liked to have heard what he said to his brother while his brother was around here. I'm sure he said to his brother, now, stay out of the way. Now, stand over there. Now, just like his father had told him, you know. And whatever good things his father told him, he learned. And whatever bad things his father told him, he learned. Now, don't get in the way. You're going to have it fall on top of you. You're going to break a leg yet, you know. And those things he doesn't want to say to his brother, because he feels that those are negative things, and those are negative things now. And he doesn't want his brother to put that in his consciousness, to have things hurt him. You see, children are very careful about that. If they're either very good or they're very bad. And kids can be very bad when they have a good example from their parents. Now, how do you live in the now? Well, what sort of a illustration would you give if someone said to you, do you live in the now? What would you say? Would you say, I live in the now because I think happiness right now where I'm at? Is that what you say? Would you say, I live in the now because every thought I think is a thought that's being thought in the now? And I am not thinking of projecting my thoughts or procrastinating my thoughts, waiting until tomorrow to do it. When you procrastinate, you're always holding off doing today what you can do tomorrow. And, of course, that's very foolish. No. How would this fit in with Eckhart Tolle's book on now? How would it fit in with his program of now? Did you ever notice how an organization grows to meet its needs? Eckhart Tolle came out with one book and one lecture, and it was very good. And then, as the demand grew, he started putting out other books. People said to him, well, now, how can I live in the now and I have a wife that is always pushing me? Or how can I live in the now when I have a husband who will never do what he's supposed to do? You know, he never lives in the now. And then, so he wrote a book on those things. How can I live in the now when my world is all in turmoil? So he wrote a book on that. And as he wrote these many books, Oprah Winfrey heard about him, or he was brought to her attention, and so he again was talking in the now, beautifully, beautiful, and just rising to the bait of fame and fortune and doing a beautiful job of it. But he just instantly dropped any past ideas and lived in the now. You think he's successful?
Yeah.
Why is he successful?
Because he's consistent.
And why is he consistent? What, and what has he done that made you feel he's consistent?
By living in the now.
Yeah. he lives what he teaches. Now, can you say that about yourself? Can you say that about yourself, that you live what you teach? Like Sylvia's on the phone with people who call up for healing, and she gives them the perfect answers for their healing needs and perfect answers. Then when Sylvia has a healing need, like she broke a fingernail or something like that, what does she do?
She
told my fingernail. And what's the first thing she tells the person on the telephone?
You're whole and perfect.
She says, you're whole and perfect. Forget anything else. You're whole and perfect. Forget your broken fingernail. You see? You're whole and perfect. But you see, did Sylvia think about her broken fingernail for just a second? Yes. You see, we are so practiced in this. We know it so well. But we've got to tell it. It's just like Eckhart Tolle. He's writing this book about now. He's doing it so beautifully. And what's the first thing he's got in the foreword and preface to the book? His unhappy experience that brought him to the now. And I got to tell it because it shows where I came from. People know that I'm human, that they can understand me. Well, nobody needs to know. You see, Eckhart Tolle Tolle has always been a success, even when he was an abject failure. Was Harry Potter always a fabulous book?
Mm-hmm.
And were each subsequent books always fabulous books? They always had been and always will be.
Yeah.
Because it's only when they started living in the now. You see, when they were living in the to be, when they were living in the future, they were not too good. But when they lived in the now, then the publishers bought it and made her the richest lady in the world. Amazing, isn't it? Now, would she ever have thought that for herself? Was she going after riches when she wrote her books? She was writing the books because it turned her on. Did Bill Gates do this? Do you know what Bill Gates is now working on? His Microsoft Corporation is worth over $1 trillion. Not billions and billions, but a trillion. And a trillion is 100 billion. Fantastic, you know? Really. And that's just how they talk about it. And what it really is even greater than that. You see, we live in a world where if we just start really using the words right, we are fantastic. Is this a very valuable piece of property we have here? Yeah.
Yes.
Do a lot of people have valuable pieces of property? Sure. Do we respect this as a valuable piece of property? No. We respect this as a piece of just meditation, quietness, peace, you know, love. But we don't think of this as a valuable piece of property, you know. If we said this was worth so many millions of dollars, people say, well, sell it and live like kings, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, we're already living like kings, and we still got the property. And you see, when you live in the now, it's not something that's going to be. What's the first thing people say to you when you get a lot of money? Now, it's a couple of simple words, two words, and both of them begin with an I. Two words.
Invest it.
Yeah. Invest it. That's exactly right. And why? If you invest it, then you don't have it to spend. Of course, you'll have a little bit to spend for a long time. But here the Walton family, with their $10-15 billion for each kid. $1 billion. Now, do they have to worry about investing it? I mean, those kids can spend like crazy people, you know, on ordinary things, you know. You buy a nation, you know, for $10 billion, that's different. But for anything you want to buy, 100 cars and 100 chauffeurs and 100 houses and, you know, what are you going to do, you know? And when will you have time to visit any of them, you know? But they are enjoying it, but they don't know how. Because their father didn't teach him. Because their father was just into building up his business, and that was his joy. Bill Gates was into building up his business, and that was his joy. And Steve Jobs, a multi-billionaire, who has a bit of a health problem, but a multi-billionaire who could retire right now and just spend. He never outspent himself. But what does he do? He loves his business. He loves the thing he's doing. For him to retire, it'd be sure that he'd die. Because he loves doing what he's doing. And each of us, living in the now is wonderful. You know? You see, people try to say to Steve Jobs that he should tell the world about his illness so the world knows how to invest in the Apple activities. Well, he didn't. And the world invested in his Apple activities. And then it came out that he was ill. And the world still invested in his Apple activities because the Apple activities were enough that he had built there that would carry that company on for umpty-dump years without even missing a heartbeat. But when he's there, what does he do? What does Steve Jobs do in his company? And I'm not talking about the itsy-bitsy stuff. What does he do?
The consciousness he is.
The consciousness of what?
Of success. Of success and creativity.
Of what?
Success and creativity.
Success?
And
creativity. Yeah, of creativity, basically. Success, yeah. He's not thinking success. He's thinking creativity. He's thinking, what new idea can I have? You know, he made the Apple iPhone and the other things, and I'm talking the MacBook, you know, and the MacBook Pro. He did not want one screw to show on the surface of that book. Isn't that amazing? I mean, that the rickety-ticky stuff like that, he had it. He has that so refined as such a work of art, as such a magnificent, and that doesn't even include what's going on inside. But he had his dream living in the now, his magic living in the now. And you know, he has this beautiful jet airplane, big one, that flies him and his family on vacations, whatever they want to go someplace. And what does he do when he goes on vacation? He will play in the snow or in the rain or in the forest or whatever, and then he comes home. But he comes home with all sorts of new ideas because he sees a raindrop. Yeah. And he says, look at that raindrop. There's no beginning and no end. And when the raindrop is falling in the wind and it's going like a bubble, you know, that's different. But when it rolls and there's no top and there's no bottom and the raindrop just comes down, ooh, wouldn't that be interesting? Or maybe we'll make the airport, the Mac Air. This is the MacBook Air. It's the computer like Dell. Dell has their portables. Well, this is a MacBook. But the Mac Air, it's skinny on one end and a little bit thicker on the other, less than an inch, and light as can be. And it's like, it's like a raindrop sideways, with it, you know, like this, like a bag. Now, where did he get the idea? They're all around him if you open your eyes to see it. If you're living in the now and delighting in the now and dreaming in the now, you know, that's the thing to do. That's the thing to do. What was it that Christian Andersen, Hans Christian Andersen said? He said, I'm telling these stories because I'm turned on by somebody's charisma, and I haven't the slightest idea where we're going to go or what it's going to say. He just lives in the now and lets it come out of him, and it fulfills whatever purpose his heart has for it to fulfill, and beautifully. And I like the way the policeman who was going to, you know, tell him to send the kids off to school, that this one kid stayed, and he told him the ugly duckly story. And afterwards, the policeman patted him on the back and said, you know, go, 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 you know. And now, that's imagination. That's living in the now. That's beautiful. Now, why at the end of the show did it have all of his antagonists, all of the antagonists for him, standing around him, listening to him tell the stories? And why was his worst antagonist, the school teacher, saying, tell the story about Thumbelina, Thumbelina, Thumbelina? You know, how crazy. But why not? Why not? Now, in your living in the now, and you're living in the now, listening to the story of Hans Christian Andersen, did you realize they did not have television? They did not have motion pictures in the theater? They did not have a lot of things that we take for granted. They did not have it. And so every little nuance of living in the now, of having things being done in the now, is so precious and so beautiful. And that's why the act of humility, of of Hans Christian Andersen going into the printer's office, and the printer says, "Look." And he looked, and there was his story. Mm-hmm. But he lived in the now, and what did he tell the printer?
Put his full name on.
Instead of Hans?
Hans the
Cobbler.
The Cobbler.
Cobbler.
Instead of Hans the Cobbler, he wanted Hans Christian Andersen. Now, that's living in the now. Why? He looked at it, and his eyes were the eyes of the world looking at it. And they don't know Hans the Cobbler, but they know Hans Christian Andersen. And if they don't know it now, they will know it when they read it, because it's going to be in the newspaper all day long.
Yes.
All day long. And, you know, we cannot fathom the depth and the significance of a remark like that, but it is beautiful. It is so fantastic. But that's living in the now. Now, we have these blue bands that we put on our wrist. Some of you still have it on, some of you don't. We have the blue band on our wrist, and it says, "Don't complain." And what is complaining?
Judging.
Complaining is talking about yesterday. It's judging yesterday. It's looking at the past. It's to complain about something that's forby, something that's done. And in complaining like that, what happens? You are where your complaint is. You are wherever you are in your consciousness of complaint. So, it's so important for us to let the past be past, to live in the now, to live this moment. And as each moment is being lived, new moments unfurl for us and reveal for us. And it is just absolutely fantastic. You see how wonderful you are? You can live in the now, and you do. And each time in Hans Christian Andersen that tension arose because they were living in the past. The rules of the city, children have to go to school, and so forth. And then, but the people themselves wanted to listen to Hans. And the rules on stage, I'm going to make it sound like I'm beating up my wife and I hate my wife, but no way. I love her beyond measure. You know, everything I do is for her. But if you didn't hear the whole story, if you didn't live in the now, even like the little boy, he lived in the now. And he said, "But Hans, that's not the way." But then later, he went in, he didn't hear the whole story. He saw her laughing and talking and thought they were laughing at the play. But they weren't. They were laughing at the joy of their heart, of this beautiful thing falling out of the blue into their hands, the answer to their dreams and their desires, but it didn't come through that way. So live in the current and the present. You know, what would have happened if Hans had gone over there when he wanted to, when his little buddy kept him from going? What would have happened? He would have found out that this was a joyous, wonderful thing. See, we are that way now. Are you ready to find out this is a joyous, wonderful thing?
Yes.
Do you look at each new thing that you look at as a brand new now experience?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, if you do, you got everything going for you. So, my beloveds, live in the now and enjoy it, because it's created just for you, by you. I love you. I love you. I love you.
Love you.
Love you.